Good morning, McDermott Road. I love you, and I appreciate you so very much. We've been talking the last few weeks about love, about how God has loved us in order that we might love others. This whole year, we've been talking about the idea that we have been saved. God has saved us in order that we would serve others. We have been made righteous, declared righteous, counted righteous, in order that we would live righteously with others. We have been justified in order that we would do justice towards others, that we have been saved for a purpose. But sometimes those concepts of love and serving people, and being righteous, and doing justice, they're kind of vague and abstract for us, aren't they? And it's hard to know, like, what does that really look like in my life? What does it really look like in your life to love your neighbor as yourself? What does it require of you to love people or to serve people or to do what is righteous or do justice or pursue justice? What does that really look like? Sometimes if we just talk about it as concepts, it's hard for us to apply it to our lives. It's easier sometimes when we can see what does that look like in the real world. What does it look like in the real world to do justice, to be a righteous person, to love your neighbor as yourself? And this morning, that's what I want to do. I want to show you what it looks like in the real world. I want to introduce you to the family of Elimelech. Now, disclaimer, that's not an actual photograph of Elimelech and his family. That's AI. But it sure beats flannel graph. I'll say that, right? If you remember flannel graph. So Elimelech is married to a woman named Naomi. And they have two sons, Mahlon and Chilion. And Elimelech and Naomi live in the little town of Bethlehem. Only they live there before anybody else, you know, lived there. And Elimelech and Naomi and Chilion and Mahlon, they live during the time of the judges. And if you're not familiar with the biblical storyline, the timeline, you may not know that the time of the judges was not a great time to live in Israel. The way that the book of Judges describes that time period is they said everyone did what was right in their own eyes. There was no king in Israel, and so everyone did what was right in their own eyes, which means there was chaos. So you might think that during that time period, no one was righteous. No one did justice. No one did the right thing or treated people in the right way. And for the most part, that was true. But there were some amazing exceptions. And that's what we're going to talk about this morning, is there were still people who did what was right. But during this time, there was a famine in Israel, probably because God was punishing them for their sins. And so Elimelech and Naomi and Chilion and Mahlon, they decided to make the hard decision of leaving home. Can you imagine? I can't imagine. Maybe some of you can imagine. And things are so bad in your country that you have to become what we would call a refugee and move to a different country. And so they leave Bethlehem and they move to the country of Moab. They move to the nation of Moab and they become sojourners, foreigners in another land. Chilion marries a girl named Orpah, and Mahlon marries a girl named Ruth, and you might recognize Ruth's name. And they live there for a while, but unfortunately, sadly, all of the men in the family died. Elimelech died, Chilion died, Mahlon died, and Naomi was left alone, except for her daughters-in-law. And she heard about this time that God had visited Israel and there was food in Israel again. And so she decided that she was going to go back and she was going to do the only thing that she knew to do, and that was depend on the generosity of her tribe, depend on the generosity of her people, but she was going to beg for food. She was going to go and be a widow in the land of her birth and hope that her family took care of her. And she encouraged Orpah and Ruth to go back to your people, go back to your nation, go back to your family and marry someone else and go live your life. Do what's right for you. Take care of yourself. And one daughter-in-law did exactly that. And you can't really blame her. That's what made sense in the context. But Ruth decided to do something different, something that really didn't make sense in her context. She refused to go home, and she told her mother-in-law, Naomi, that she was going to stick with her. Here's what she says in Ruth chapter 1, verse 16, some famous words. Ruth said, "Do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you, for where you go, I will go, and where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord do so to me, and more also, if anything but death parts me from you." See, this kind of covenant faithfulness, this kind of steadfast love, the Hebrew word is chesed. That's really hard to say, though, chesed. So I'm just going to say chesed from now on, just so you know. But this kind of steadfast love, this kind of faithfulness, this kind of covenant love is at the heart of what it means to do what is righteous and what is just. It's at the heart of righteousness and justice. And we see this first in Ruth saying to her mother-in-law, Naomi, against all odds, against what makes sense for her, I'm with you. I'm going to take care of you. I'm going to go where you go. And if you die, I'm going to die. I'm going to die wherever you die. Your people are my people. Your God is my God. I'm going to stick with you. In fact, Ruth really embodies this idea of righteousness. Here's what one author said specifically about the book of Proverbs, but about what righteousness looks like versus wickedness. In the book of Proverbs, he says, the righteous are willing to disadvantage themselves to advantage the community. The wicked are willing to disadvantage the community to advantage themselves. See how that works? Righteousness and those who live righteously are those who are willing to disadvantage themselves to leverage what they have, even at their own hurt, at their own expense, at their own cost, for the sake of others. And that's what Ruth is willing to do. That's chesed. That is this covenant faithfulness, this steadfast love, this mercy that is willing to say, I'm going to sacrifice what's mine for the sake of my mother-in-law, for the sake of her family, for the sake of her clan, for the sake of her tribe, for the sake of my dead husband. Mahlon, to do what is best for them and not necessarily what's best for me. Because what's best for Ruth is go back home, go back to your parents, go back to your tribe, go back to your people. But she doesn't do what's best for her. She does what's best for others because she is living a righteous life and embodies this chesed love. It's amazing, isn't it? That in the time of the judges, in the time where Israel is in chaos and there is so much wickedness, that Naomi goes to Moab and finds a righteous daughter-in-law. What an incredible gift. And whether you know it or not, Ruth is a gift to you as well. We'll find out later just how true that is. So Ruth and Naomi, they go back to the little town of Bethlehem, and they do what they had a right to do, and that is go to the fields and pick up the leftovers. We talked about that last week, didn't we? As we talked about the book of Deuteronomy, that was the right of widows. And Ruth, as now a refugee in a different country, as a sojourner, as a foreigner, as an immigrant, she has a right the righteous thing, the just thing, is for her to be able to glean, to pick up the leftovers that are left in the field after harvest. And so that's exactly what they begin to do. So Ruth goes to the field and begins to pick up the leftovers. But they go to a man who's named Boaz, to his field. He's a relative of theirs. And Boaz not only allows them to have what they have a right to have, the leftovers, but even instructs his harvesters to leave some behind on purpose for them. And so Boaz does what is righteous and what is just. And then he says this to Ruth, chapter 2 and verse 8. Boaz said to Ruth, "Now listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they are reaping and go after them. Have I not charged the young men not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn." I want to be really sensitive in how I address this. But I'm compelled to say that in a group this size, sadly and unfortunately, I am sure that there are sisters in this room who have experienced the opposite of what Ruth experienced with Boaz. I'm sure that there are women in this room who have experienced men of power and strength who have leveraged their power and strength to take advantage of you. That is wickedness. That is injustice. For someone to take their power and their strength and to use it to take advantage of someone who is vulnerable. And Boaz does the opposite of that. He uses his power and strength to protect the vulnerability of this sister, of this neighbor, of this widow, of this foreigner. He uses his power and strength to protect her, to make sure that she is not taken advantage of. They lived in a world where that was uncommon. Unfortunately, we also live in a world where that is uncommon. And all too often, it is exposed or even boasted about. Men of strength and power who use their power and strength to take advantage of others. That is wickedness. This is righteousness. This is justice. He not only fed her, he only did what was expected of him. He did that, but he went far beyond that. He provided abundantly for her. He protected her. He acted with righteousness and justice. He did not pervert the justice that was due to the foreigner, to the widow. He took care of her. Why? Because that's what he was supposed to do. That's righteousness. That's what God's people are supposed to do. Otherwise, it would be a perversion of justice. Look at chapter 2 and verse 10. "Then she fell on her face, bowing to the ground, and said to him, 'Why have I found favor in your eyes, that you should take notice of me, since I am a foreigner?'" Ruth knows that this kind of chesed, this kind of righteousness, this kind of justice is unusual. That it would be typical for a man of power to take advantage of a woman who is vulnerable. And Boaz does not do that. And so Ruth responds with surprise and shock. Verse 11, "But Boaz answered her." Here's why. Boaz answered her, "All that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before." Do you see what he says? She says, "Why are you being so generous with me? I'm a foreigner. Why are you being so kind? Why are you showing me chesed? Why are you showing me steadfast love?" He said, "Because I heard how you showed chesed to your mother-in-law. I heard of your steadfast love, and her steadfast love inspired his." Do you see how sometimes that works? That when you do what is righteous and just, when you show steadfast love, when you do what you're supposed to, it sometimes inspires that in others. And Boaz acts with righteousness and justice and love. Why? Because he saw it first in Ruth. This Moabite woman inspired him to show that kind of love and justice to others. But I hope we can already see that their steadfast love, their righteousness, their justice is a glimpse. It's a picture of God's. It's a reflection of God's. Because God is the ultimate example of righteousness. In fact, he's the only one who is truly, ultimately righteous and just and shows this kind of steadfast love. And so we read in verse 12. Boaz says, "The Lord repay you for what you have done, and a full reward be given to you by the Lord, the God of Israel, under whose wings you have come to take refuge." Then she said, "I have found favor in your eyes, my Lord, for you have comforted me and spoken kindly to your servant, though I am not one of your servants." Did Ruth take shelter under God's wing of protection? Or under Boaz's wing of protection? And the answer is yes. You guys already know. You're good. You're getting so good. Yes, it's both, isn't it? And that's the way it's supposed to be. When God's people are reflecting God's righteousness, they care for the poor, the foreigner, the fatherless, the widow. They are a conduit of God's righteousness and justice. And that's what Boaz is doing. He's being a conduit of God's righteousness and justice. But it's not really his, because he recognizes, as we've been talking about on Wednesday nights, he's just a steward. This field doesn't really belong to me. It belongs to God. So of course I'm going to give you the produce of this field, because it's not mine, it's God's. And he has shown righteousness and justice and steadfast love to me. So of course, those who come to me for protection, I'm just a conduit for God's protection. This is what the love of God continues to do. Now, in the next chapter, in chapter 4, we'll see the idea of being a redeemer. And this idea of redemption, we've talked about it several times, but redemption means to reclaim something or repossess something on your own behalf, but more often on behalf of someone else. And Naomi's family, Elimelech's family, Elimelech, who's dead and buried, Mahlon and Chilion, they are in desperate need of a redeemer, of redemption. They had no husband to reclaim the family land. They had no sons to carry on the family line. In that society, Naomi is basically dead. I mean, it's really nice that Boaz has given them some grain. I mean, that's incredibly generous. But without someone to carry on the family line, without someone to reclaim the family land, Naomi and Ruth with her are basically dead. They're just walking around and waiting for the ultimate end. They need a redeemer. They need someone to step in and bring things back into the possession of the family. They need someone to carry on the family line, to reclaim the family land. They need a redeemer. And there's someone in the family who can do that. There's a close relative who can do exactly that. And so Boaz approaches this potential redeemer. And here's what it says in chapter 4, verse 4. "So I thought," this is Boaz talking to this other family member, "So I thought I would tell you of it and say, buy it in the presence of those sitting here and in the presence of the elders of my people. And if you will redeem it, redeem it. But if you will not, tell me that I may know, for there is no one besides you to redeem it, and I come after you." And he said, the other guy, he said, "I will redeem it." And so Boaz approaches this other family member and says, you're a closer relative than me, and someone really needs to reclaim the family property and bring it back into the possession of Naomi so that she's not dead, so that you can revive her, so that you can reclaim what belongs to her. And the other guy said, yeah, yeah, I'll do that. That sounds great. Verse 5, then Boaz said, okay, here's the catch. The day you buy the field from the hand of Naomi, you also acquire Ruth the Moabite, the widow of the dead, in order to perpetuate the name of the dead in his inheritance. Then the Redeemer said, well, I cannot redeem it for myself, lest I impair my own inheritance. Take my right of redemption yourself, for I cannot redeem it. You see, because once it's redeemed, you're redeeming it not in your own name. You're redeeming the family not in your own name, but in the name of Mahlon and Elimelech. You're having a child with this woman, but you're doing it, and that child really is Mahlon's child, because you're doing for his family what he can no longer do for himself because he's dead. You're reclaiming the land in his family's name. And so if you do this, you're doing it for the sake of their inheritance, not yours. And so he begins to count the cost. And that's the thing about doing justice. There's always a cost. Doing justice is costly. And he begins to think about it and says, actually, if I do that and I marry this widow and then I have a child for her, for Mahlon, for Elimelech, for Naomi, for their family, I'm really going to mess up my own inheritance. And he begins to think about the cost. He says, it's just too high. I can't pay that cost. You do it. You redeem the family. You do justice by them. So verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth and she became his wife. And he went into her, and the Lord gave her conception, and she bore a son. Then the women said to, what name? To Naomi. Then the women said to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. See, the story goes back not to Ruth, but to Naomi. Because Ruth and Boaz worked together to bring justice to the family. They restored Naomi. They redeemed Naomi. They brought her family back to life. Everything that Ruth did in covenanting herself to Naomi and in marrying Boaz and what Boaz did in marrying Ruth and redeeming the family, they did to restore the family of Naomi. To bring them back to life. They have redeemed the family line. They have reclaimed the family land. Verse 15, he, this child that has been born, he shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age. For your daughter-in-law, who loves you, who is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him. Then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. See, church, this is justice. You've been wondering in the last few weeks, what does justice look like? That's what it looks like. When everything is as it should be. Life has been restored. Land has been reclaimed. The family line has been restored. The hungry have been fed. The homeless have been sheltered. The foreigner has become family. That is justice. Naomi, or rather Ruth and Boaz, Ruth and Boaz were willing to disadvantage themselves to advantage Naomi and Elimelech and Mahlon and restore that family to life. And I hope that we can see how this points forward to the gospel. Can't we? Because Jesus is that redeemer, that restorer of life, bringing back from the dead. Redeeming us, restoring us. In fact, verse 17, and the women of the neighborhood gave the baby a name, saying, a son has been born to, not Ruth, a son has been born to Naomi. And they named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David. And of course, David, 1,000 years later, would become the father of Jesus. Ruth and Boaz work together to redeem the house of Elimelech, to restore them, to bring them back from the dead. And then their great-great-great-great-great-great-grandson redeemed you. He did for you what Boaz and Ruth did for the household of Naomi. They did that. That led directly to you. Because Ruth and Boaz were willing to disadvantage themselves, to advantage the community, because they were willing to act righteously and pursue justice, that led directly to Israel having King David. And that led directly to the world having King Jesus. They did what was right. Of course, they didn't know that their great-grandson was going to be King David. They didn't know that. They didn't know what was going to happen. They were just doing the right thing. Just doing the right thing. And what does that look like, to do the right thing? Here's what Proverbs says. Open your mouth for the mute, for the rights of all who are destitute. Open your mouth, judge righteously, defend the rights of the poor and needy. That's what Ruth did. That's what Boaz did. They defended the rights of Naomi. They sacrificed for her. They disadvantaged themselves for her. Now, I mean, don't get me wrong. During this time period, Israel is still a mess. It's still chaos. I mean, that was really nice what you did for that one family in that one town of Bethlehem, in that one tribe of Judah. You did something good there, but Israel is still a mess. But eventually, that act, that love, that righteousness, that justice would lead to justice for the whole nation. And eventually, that would lead to justice for the whole world. But what did they do? It was just one act of sacrificial love. One act of sacrificial love led to Israel having King David. And then eventually, that led to his descendant, Jesus, and his one act of sacrificial love, of giving himself, led to your redemption. And hopefully, knowing that now you are a part of this story, you are a part of this family, you are part of the family of the Moabite woman Ruth, you are part of the family of the righteous man Boaz, you are part of David's family, you are part of Jesus' family, and it means your redemption. But it also means our education, that we learn to do what they did, to act righteously, to do justice, to act with chesed, with steadfast love. And sometimes that means one act of sacrificial love. One act of sacrificial love, where we count the cost and say, this is going to cost me a lot. This is going to be hard. This is going to be difficult. But it's the right thing to do. It's the right thing to do. And I don't know for you what that will be this week, but chances are you're going to see a moment where you might think, how is this going to fix anything? The world's still going to be a mess after this. It's not going to fix all the stuff in all the world. It's just one act of sacrificial love. But sometimes that's what God needs from us, one act of sacrificial love that God can use to bring about good, more good than you can possibly imagine. So that's what we're called to do, is just act faithfully. Just do the next right thing. Just love your neighbor as yourself and see what God can do with it. That's how we respond. It's how we respond to what God has done for us in Jesus. His one act of sacrificial love means our redemption. And maybe there's somebody here this morning and you haven't yet put Jesus on in baptism and you're ready to commit your life to him, to pledge your loyalty and allegiance to King Jesus, to say to Jesus what Ruth said to Naomi, I'm with you. Your people are my people. Your God is my God. I'll go with you anywhere and everywhere. That's what we're doing when we're baptized into Christ. And maybe you're ready to make that decision. Or maybe you've already made that decision, but you need to recommit yourself to Him. I know along the way, we all have to look at our lives and say, am I really practicing love? Love when it's hard. Love when it's costly. Love when I have to sacrifice. And we need reminders to recommit ourselves to Him. Or maybe you're feeling like Naomi was feeling, alone and cut off and bitter and upset. And you need to experience the love of Jesus through the people of Jesus. We would love to pray with you. We'd love to help you in any way you need us. We're here for you this morning. As together we stand, sing this song.